The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Loyal listeners may recall that I live in the state of Oregon, which made history in 2020 by passing overwhelmingly the Drug Addiction Treatment and Recovery Act, Ballot Measure 110. On this week's show, we're going to look at what impact Measure 110 has had so far. Morgan Godvin with the Action Lab is the founder of harm reduction organization Beats Overdose and also the engagement editor over the American Prison Newspapers collection at JSTOR Daily.
Thank you so much, Monica. And, you know, left out of my introduction there, my bio is that I am formerly incarcerated. Specifically, I was arrested in the state of Oregon in multiple different counties for felony drug possession and sent to jail many, many times. And that is how I come to this work. And today I am a researcher. So Emily gave us the high level drug decriminalization, but specifically, what is Measure 110? What are the mechanisms by which it operates? So this took the quantities that were already set by the legislature. So we had defelonized in 2017. So it took those misdemeanor levels and dropped them from a misdemeanor to a Class E violation, which is a civil offense, not a legal offense. That included a maximum fine of $100, which can very easily be waived by doing a drug screening, a drug evaluation. Now, that does not mean compulsory or coercive treatment. That just means people go through the screening and are offered voluntary services that they can then engage with. The limits for, so it's anything less than 1 gram of heroin and also now fentanyl. 1 gram or less is that Class E violation. You can see here the thresholds for when it becomes a misdemeanor, again, on the right in that table. But it didn't just decriminalize those low-level possession amounts. So Measure 110 did two main things, right? So the table you see where we're no longer arresting people for those lower level drugs, but then it diverted the majority of our cannabis tax revenue into a fund for drug treatment services, specifically creating behavioral health resource networks, which for the rest of this call, I'm going to pronounce as BURNS. Okay, that's how you say that acronym, BURN. And it created at least one in each county. And each BURN has the full spectrum of services that were funded under the measure. So we're going to see housing, low barrier treatment, peer services, supported employment, and harm reduction in every single county in the state. But what was most revolutionary about this, I feel, is that according to the measure, they had to form the Oversight and Accountability Council to determine the grant funding, to determine the priorities, steering the ship. And who is steering the ship? It is people with lived experience in the state of Oregon. About half of the council are formerly incarcerated. The council is majority Black, Indigenous, and persons of color. And the vast majority of persons on the council identify as persons with lived experience with drug use. So I saw, I think, and I applied through a tweet. I saw the Oregon Health Authority had released an application for the Oversight and Accountability Council shortly after the measure passed. And I applied right there through Twitter on a Google form. And a couple months later, I was notified that I was being appointed to the OAC. And so here is the timeline. We voted on it in November 2020. It passed. February 2021, the first part of the measure went into effect, meaning they could no longer arrest people if their drug possession were under those thresholds that you saw before. In June 2021, it was codified into our statutes by legislature with Senate Bill 755. We passed the OAC passed temporary rules for the BURNS in September 2021. And then we started the wonderful process of grant making in a new, never before done way, where, you know, it was the OAC reviewing the grants, then later with the support of the Oregon Health Authority. We got some money out the door really quickly with the Access to Care grants in June of 2022. It was even sooner. There were some delays with the grant making by a few months, and the money finally went out the door in September 2022. So that is a total of $300 million that was infused into Oregon's drug treatment services like that. The largest infusion into our behavioral health services ever in that amount of time. And so now we are almost a year, coming 10 months after the money has gone out the door. There was hiring issues, right? We're in a workforce shortage. Measure 110 funds were mandated to pay people a living wage. So we saw the average wage for the behavioral health workforce shoot up. But now organizations are fully staffed for the most part. And we are actually seeing the services on the ground. I see them every single day in my work. So you see immediately, arrests plummeted. Arrests were already down because of COVID. So it's a little bit confounding. And you can see that on this graph here. But arrests have maintained at that very low level. So there's different estimates for how many people have been spared arrests and the collateral consequences that come with an arrest at this point. I think Tara could probably give, I think it's 10,000 people now, 2 years later, have average, have been not been arrested, have not suffered the collateral consequences that I went through, have not been strip searched because they had a residue amount of drugs in their pocket. The things that happened to me are no longer happening to other Oregonians. First rule, do no harm. So that's the arrest. That's the part on the left. The second part is healing. And that is much more complicated. And so you're going to see the breakdown of our funding here. The majority of the funding went to the Behavioral Health Resource Networks, which does have that full continuum of care. And then you're also going to see the Access to Care grants on the pie chart on the right. All right. So the Oregon Health Authority finally released this lovely dashboard that I actually kind of like because I'm a big nerd. We funded 233 community-based organizations across 42 burns in 36 counties. Some burns have multiple counties. I believe 60,000 Oregonians have received services, Tara? Is that
the... Yeah, it's complicated, but we do know how many Oregonians. I think that was meant to be taken off the slide.
Yeah, sorry. 60,000. Some of those might be a double count. It's a little bit hard to track the data, but it is certainly in the tens of thousands of unique individuals have received Measure 110 funded services. So what that means is you do not have to have gotten a Class E violation to be eligible for services. The whole point of Measure 110 is that you do not have to pass through handcuffs or police contact to be eligible for the services that you need. Every single Oregonian is eligible for them at no cost. So there have been 5,391 citations issued to date. And I think some of the next facts I like just because they are surprising to people. The most common drug that people are being cited for is actually methamphetamine. And as Tara will talk about later, you're going to hear some opponents with certain critiques or certain narratives. And one of the concerns is that Measure 110 would attract people for drug use in the state. But when we look at the law enforcement data, the citation data, 95% of all people cited are Oregon residents, meaning they have an Oregon ID, they live in the state of Oregon, they are Oregonians. And so clearly people are not flocking to the state. That's a fairly pernicious myth that we also see in homelessness, and that report from Governor Newsom's office last month also debunked it in homelessness, showing 90% of all the homeless people that they interviewed in the state of California became homeless in the state of California. We're last housed in the state of California. And so I just think that is pretty interesting that we have law enforcement data here proving that fact. And another, so we it not only diverted the cannabis tax revenue, but according to the measure, it was going to reinvest the justice savings, which was $37 million in the first biennium and $39 million in the second, for a total of $76 million that would have gone strictly to incarceration, which has been shown to not be beneficial in our fight against drug addiction or drug overdose, have now gone to health-based services, supportive services for Oregonians in need. So again, as Tara will probably talk about later, you're going to hear some pretty spurious claims being made in the media about Measure 110, and specifically associating it with petty crime or an increase of various types of crime, perceptions of public disorder. So RTI International did this research project where they compared calls to 911 over time for Sacramento, Seattle, Portland, and Boise. So those are like our, you know, Pacific Northwest, similarly sized situated cities. And they found that there was no increase to calls for 911 after February 2021 when we stopped arresting people for drug possession. Essentially, there was the standard seasonal changes that occur, a slight uptick in the summer for all cities evaluated. But Portland did not stand out. When you look at a graph of our calls for service, you cannot tell the difference before and after drug decriminalization. We are incredibly similar, especially to Seattle.
That was Morgan Godvin with the Action Lab and Beats Overdose speaking August 17th at the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers' 22nd Annual State Criminal Justice Network Conference on the topic of drug decriminalization in Oregon. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Tara Hurst is the Executive Director of the Health Justice Recovery Alliance.
So I think it's really important to take a step back and remember that when Measure 110 passed, we were just starting to walk. We were walking into a global pandemic. It was a shutdown that none of us have experienced. We were all kind of working from home, juggling, and not knowing what was going to happen, right? I remember walking into the 2021 legislative session that really, we didn't know what the economy was doing. We didn't know what the future for kind of what our needs as a state was going to be, just on the basic levels of health, being able to provide education for our kids. Just the uncertainty was real. And so here comes a ballot measure that has an extremely aggressive timeline for practical reasons, because like Morgan said, first, do no harm. We needed to make sure that no more people were getting arrested and barriers on their records for having small personal amounts of drugs on them. We also needed to make sure that we were investing in a system that Oregon has never really invested in, which is our behavioral health and especially our addiction systems. So when I first started was the day after it passed in November of 2020. You know, some of the first conversations we had were with providers on the ground, and they were saying, we're going to close our doors. We can't afford to stay open. We can't house people anymore. And we're about to make the problem even worse. Oregon at the time, and it still is, we had about the second highest rates of addiction in the country. And we were at the bottom, if not at 50th, in access to addiction services. We are worse than states that didn't take the Medicaid waiver, right? So just like painting a picture of where we started. We walked into the legislative session, we stayed on our timelines, and we really made sure when we walked in, everybody told us there's no way we can invest these funds. We don't know what's happening. We're in the middle of a global pandemic. You can't ask our Oregon Health Authority to do anything other than work on this one crisis. And we push back. We're going to lose even more services that we can't afford to lose. we are going to lose more lives that we can't afford to lose, and we really need your support. So we did get some early quick money out into the community in July of 2021. That really helped stop some of these critical organizations like Bridges to Change, was able to keep their housing in a rural county in Wasco County open because they were about to have to close it, all the way to like folks being able to actually expand their harm reduction efforts, their overdose prevention efforts, expand housing, and help stabilize some of our community. And I think that that's an important thing to remember when we're looking back 3 years, not even 3 years later, what has happened, right? So then as Morgan had talked about, we looked at $265 million more that needed to get invested right away into these community services and these community-based organizations. And although I do agree with Morgan that the first most transformational thing was getting the Oversight and Accountability Council, I think the thing that nobody is talking about that is really this quiet revolution that's happening in Oregon is we invested $265 million into local community-based providers who are meeting their community where they're at and saving lives. And we did this in a way that isn't normal, at least for the Oregon system, which is to push it through our big insurance groups, our community care organizations, or through our counties. We did this by pushing the state, and the council was pivotal in making sure this happened, getting those funds directly to our providers, saying, we trust that you know what you're doing and what your community needs most. And we prioritize providers who are led and also working with communities who've been most impacted by the war on drugs. And that is the revolution that's happening in Oregon. We have so many incredible providers on the ground right now, working with folks, going tent to tent, going, doing outreach that they've never been able to do. And the stories that we're hearing from across the state, not just Portland, but in Bend and in Medford, and, you know, kind of reaches the whole state, is that because of the outreach that 110 is allowing them to do and expand their housing and their detox capacity and their intensive outpatient capacity, when somebody's ready because of the outreach they've done, they are getting connected to services that day. It's not through the citation system. It's because people with lived experience are building relationships with people who are suffering and struggling and are giving them dignity and choice and saying, I'm here when you're ready. And those folks are feeling safe to say, I'm ready. And those people are getting placed in detox. They're getting placed in housing. I'm going to a grand opening of a detox tomorrow in East Portland that is so exciting. And it wouldn't have happened if they hadn't gotten the $1.5 million that they got for 110 11 months ago. They opened a 16-bed facility in 11 months. That is unheard of. That is extremely fast and just really inspirational. So I think when we are seeing all of this, you know, Portland's a dumpster fire. I love our city and it's not a dumpster fire. And I took my family down there over the weekend, and it's still beautiful. But also, people are suffering in our streets. There has been a huge increase in evictions. Measure 110 didn't touch evictions. There's a huge influx of, you know, our downtown core hasn't brought their employees back. So we do have a lot of abandoned buildings by large corporations. There's a lot that is leading into this kind of swirl around Measure 110 is the reason for everything that you don't like in Oregon and nationally as well. I think that, you know, what this slide is also telling you about is every single session, legislative session we've had, we've faced at least 6 to 10 bills with an outright repeal of Measure 110, with a recriminalization of for 110, and multiple attempts, and not just like fly attempts, real attempts at taking the money back, because people aren't comfortable with where the money went, because it went to the communities most harmed by the war on drugs, and it's doing the work that it needs to be doing. Are we doing enough? Absolutely not. We have not invested in the behavioral health care system here in Oregon. That is not because of Measure 110. Measure 110 is actually part of the solution and has invested a lot of money into that system. We did make a mistake on the previous slide. It's actually $39 million that came from the public safety, from the law and order side over to healthcare systems, and are investing that right back into our providers. So we heard that a lot of that money was coming from parole and probation. Those funds have now been diverted into healthcare, which is exactly what the voters voted for. I think we all understand that we are in a political environment. This is not about the policy. We're seeing too many people die of overdoses because people are still thinking of this as a moral issue and not as a healthcare issue that we should be treating as a healthcare issue. It's getting linked to literally everything from crime to homelessness and to public disorder. This is the fight, and it's an all-out assault at this point on people who are struggling and who just need access to services.
That was Tara Hurst, Executive Director of the Health Justice Recovery Alliance, speaking August 17th at the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers' 22nd Annual State Criminal Justice Network Conference on the topic of drug decriminalization in Oregon. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Let's hear again from Morgan Godwin and Tara Hurst. First, here's Morgan Godwin.
So last summer in 2022, I went to Portugal for 2 weeks to study their system of drug decriminalization, having already been involved with Oregon's process for about 18 months at that point. And it was very enlightening. So I just want to back up the three different ways that Portugal has been used for and against us, because it keeps changing. If you would have asked people who support the drug war in 2020 if they would adopt a Portuguese-style model of drug decriminalization, seeing how successful Portugal would have been, I'm not sure what they would have said. I don't think they would have been like, yes, let's decriminalize drugs exactly like Portugal did. But then Measure 110 passed. You know, various groups would make comparisons between Oregon and Portugal. And then you saw this narrative that like Measure 110 isn't enough like Portugal's. It doesn't go far enough to be like Portugal's, which was interesting coming from people who literally support the war on drugs and would not have ever endorsed the Portuguese model. But I thought that was, and then you'll hear sometimes that the Portuguese model endorsed like a course of treatment. And so that was like the first thing that I studied when I got to Portugal. I got on the ground, I speak Portuguese. And so I was able to embed myself with drug users. They handled their heroin problems so well, I couldn't find any heroin users, but crack was on the rise. And I heard that last summer, and that's about to come back into the narrative just in a second. And I was talking to drug users. None of them had been sent to the dissuasion committee. They said as long as they were honest with police officers about the quantity of drugs that they had, that it was okay. But every single one of them knew exactly where and when to access services. And that blew my mind. But they were not afraid of police officers. In fact, they saw police officers as either neutral or mildly benevolent. And having been a drug user in the United States, that just, again, shocked me. Portugal was lauded as this like international success for their implementation of drug decriminalization since 2001. And last year, the critique was that Oregon isn't enough like Portugal. But now, starting a couple months ago, this has shifted. So you suddenly saw that some people in Portugal are now 20 some years later upset with their drug decriminalization. Why? Well, they're having a housing crisis, very similar to Portland's, actually. Their real estate values have increased on par to that of Portland's. So what has that produced? An increase in homelessness. Without financial security, they're also seeing small, much less than the United States, but increases in petty crimes. And similar to what we see in Oregon, you're seeing this convergence of other social factors in Portugal and people, well, they can't really fix the housing crisis, right? They can't provide people an economic security, but they can recriminalize drugs, or at least they can claim that they want to. And so you're seeing a small faction of Portuguese people saying, drug decriminalization is a failure. Well, it was very it's 22 years later, and all the data shows that it was very successful. They still have some of the lowest drug use rates in Europe, very low rates of overdose, very low rates of HIV. But it is this connection between any social ill that is visible to passersby and drug decriminalization. And so that's where we're sort of seeing a link again between Portugal and Oregon, because people are becoming frustrated with homelessness or whatever they're seeing on the street and pinning that on drug decriminalization in Portugal. Now, the Portuguese model is very sound, right? It has been in effect for 22 years, and I do not think it is going anywhere. I didn't hear anything about this when I was literally studying decriminalization in Portugal last year. But, you know, when the media descends on a place, you can always find opponents that will give you quotes, juicy quotes for your story. So I think that's more what's happening in Portugal. But yeah, we have a rise, a fraying of the social fabric fairly internationally across Western nations, rising economic insecurity, and incredible housing unaffordability. And that is manifesting in people becoming frustrated, and they tend to find the nearest scapegoat, which in this case is drug decriminalization.
That was Morgan Godwin. Now here's Tara Hurst.
So lessons, there's so many lessons. I'd say first, don't go first. Because that's really hard, and we're learning all the lessons right now, and it's not the most fun. That being said, because we did go first, we've learned a lot. We need to make sure that we're telling the story of 110, and it's not about, it shouldn't be on the shoulders of the advocates. It really is about the state owning the issue and making sure that they're constituents know what services are available, how to get a hold of them, why they're important. Help us destigmatize the fact that people who are struggling with substance use are not morally failing folks. They, a lot of them just are trying to treat untreated trauma and all of the other things that I think most people on this call understand. And we need better data, right? It's also really difficult to do this in a pandemic. So I'd say other lesson, let's not try and do big policy change during a pandemic. That being said, I wouldn't take any of it back because, like Morgan said, at least 10,000 people don't have criminal records today. And at least 60,000 services within Oregon have been served to people who needed it. Period. End of story. Don't regret it. And we are in the middle of a political storm that, quite frankly, I haven't seen in a really long time. And it's really difficult. We are facing real challenges to Measure 110. There is a big effort to get it back on the ballot and recriminalize folks. And not just even recriminalize them back to where it was, but actually make a more harsher and stiffer punishments. We know that in other states that, like New Mexico, that have felonized possession, their overdose death rates are even higher. So that's not a way to solve this problem. We need to figure out a better way of getting in front of folks who are concerned about this and how to really work with them.
That was Tara Hurst, and before her, you heard Morgan Godwin. They spoke August 17th at the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers' 22nd Annual State Criminal Justice Network Conference on the topic of drug decriminalization in Oregon. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying
for the
so
Drug
long.
Truth Network, so long. This is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.